Are you ready to sell big and create a loyal army of passionate influencers? Then this show's for you. Hi, everyone. This is The Art of the Big Sell. And I'm your host, Lisa Copeland, award-winning sales strategist, author, renowned speaker, and highly sought-after thought leader. I'm going to teach you to create a movement and build an empire. I'll be having conversations with the most innovative disruptors, pioneers, and thought leaders who will share their voices and teach you how they changed their world by adopting the big sell in their organizations and in their lives. Hi, everybody. It's Lisa Copeland, and welcome to my show, The Art of the Big Sell, where I talk to people about big ideas and big success. And today I am so excited to have who I think is one of the greatest women in the universe and one of the biggest successes that I've ever met, Sharon Lecter. So just a little bit about my dear friend and author, Sharon Lecter. She has sold over 30 million books and was a partner in the Rich Dad, Poor Dad multi-gazillion dollar franchise. And then later went on to write Think and Grow Rich for Women and work with the Napoleon Hill Foundation on bringing Napoleon Hill's work back to life. Oh, and then did I mention, she was one of the creators of the audiobooks. And so no one can tell Sharon's story better than Sharon, but I am so honored to have this great entrepreneur, this great leader on my show today, because she brings so much value. She's one of the top leading financial literacy experts in the world. And she has spent her life and her career pouring into entrepreneurs, into businesses, and into her friends. And I can say that firsthand. So without any further ado, I want to present to you Sharon Lecter.
Good morning, Lisa. I'm delighted to be with you. And hello, everyone. Well, that intro is pretty long only because of my age.
No, it's because of your massive accomplishments. Sharon, I want to kind of jump into it. I want to start at the audiobooks. You know, I want to hear about that because I bought those books like crazy for my kids. So my daughter's 28 years old. And when she was about 2 years old, I mean, they were in every store. You know, I used to read Cinderella, Mickey Mouse, and she just loved when I would hit the Cinderella button and Cinderella would speak to her. And just the fact that that was you, it's unbelievable to me. So I want to hear about that. And what was the big idea behind those audiobooks?
Well, the big idea is, you know, the most successful businesses solve a problem or serve a need. And we're talking about the mid 80s. And it was a time when children weren't really into reading very much. And I met the inventor, and we actually both served on the American Cancer Society board. So we became friends through nonprofits. And he actually hired my husband, Michael, to do the patent on the work. And we're talking about the sound books, not just audiobooks, sound books that have the strips down the side where you
could touch a button. Yeah, the sound books are what I was talking about. So, okay, so sound book. Okay.
And so I said, you know, this kind of technology is fantastic. So as friends, we started collaborating, and then he brought me on to help build the business. And we went from 1 million to 9 to 23. And in the fourth year, we were approaching 52 million is when we sold the company. But what was brilliant about what we did, and I say this because it was taking that big idea, but saying, how can you get that big idea into people's hands? All right. So we had this new technology, and back then bookstores were very quiet places. And, you know, little old ladies behind the counter said, get out of here. We don't want things that make noise in our bookstores. So we said, well, how can we get people to trust us with this new technology? And that was when we decided to partner with people that parents trusted. And so we went to Disney, Sesame Street, Warner Brothers, and we came out with blockbuster books because we had them as partners. We had to write big checks because we licensed their names and their logos and their characters. But it helped us establish trust in the market, and it helped us make our big idea a reality because we partnered with a trusted partner, and immediately that trust transferred to us. And so that's when you're thinking of your idea and your big idea, that power of association, which I teach, is so important. And that's why when, you know, you and I work together on various events, it's that power of association that allows you to tell the world that you're not, it's not just a one woman fight. It's not just a one person fight. It is a mission, a movement. And so we really did, you know, create an entire industry. And I tell my techie friends that I think we were the first disruptive technology, because bookstores became very active places after that.
Yeah, you know, and I think about that, you know, but you're so right. But, you know, now, like if you were to go to a Barnes & Noble, you know, just the ones that are left, you know, there, it's a coffee shop, it's a Starbucks, there's games, there's, you know, all kinds of things going on. And I think they might sell a few books along the way, but it really is about entertainment. And so that's so cool to know that you blazed the path for that. All right, so you sold that company, and then you became a partner in the Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I want to say franchise, but just the phenomena of that. And so tell us about that.
Well, that was also, you know, we moved to Arizona in 1991. And in 92, our oldest son went off to college, and he left in September, came home in December, and asked us to bail him out because he'd gotten himself into credit card debt. I was pretty mad at him, but I was more mad at myself. So it was December of 1992 when I dedicated the rest of my career to financial literacy and financial education, and it's still my passion today. And fast forward a few years, again, somebody went in to see my husband to get his intellectual property expertise and advice, and his name was Robert Kiyosaki, and he had on flip-flops and Hawaiian shorts, and my husband had the corner office in this big law firm, and he helped him create patent the idea for the cash flow game. And I met him at the beta test, and I was the only one who got out of the rat race. And so I really loved the idea. I volunteered to help because of my background with the talking books and games. I was able to bring in my contacts and my manufacturing systems to help create that game as a reality. And in that process, Robert asked me to become his partner and write the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, because he wanted to sell this game for $200. And I said, well, you know, you probably need something that shares your philosophy, that's either free or that you can give away or very inexpensive. And so most people don't realize we literally wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad as a brochure for the board game. We thought our brand was cash flow because that was the name of the game. We never expected that we would write more books after Rich Dad. And the book, of course, took on a life of its own, and the world said, no, your brand is Rich Dad, not cash flow. And so then we decided, okay, we'll write three books. So we wrote Rich Dad, Cash Flow Quadrant, and Rich Dad's Guide to Investing, thinking, okay, that's our trilogy. Well, 15 books later in that series of books that I co-authored, and then we established a whole new series called Rich Dad Advisors, written by people on specific topics. We became a mega book company, and something that we just were listening to the market and what the demands and requests were from our customers, continued to, you know, concentrate on supporting the game and doing more advanced versions of the game. But again, it was all centered around financial education, and we launched that in 1997 and built that over a 10-year period to a huge success. And I don't really think it was because of us. I think it was the right message at the right time. And it was a huge viral success before the internet. So our claim to, we went around, we were over 100 different countries, over 50 languages. And it was really because we were sharing a story. And that was the big idea, was don't preach, share. Mm-hmm. And so instead of saying, this is what you have to do, you know, you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do this, people kind of back up when they get that. We were sharing stories of how others had done things. And by sharing that, people could say, if he can do that, I can. If she can do that, maybe I can. And by making it more a parable and sharing stories, we really touched people's hearts, that people were able to internalize it and make really demonstrative changes in their life to improve their financial situation.
So one of the things I hear you talk about is really that people need relatable role models. And, you know, by writing the stories and the parables and what you all did, you know, that gave people, you know, a relatable role model. You know, it was like, okay, if they can do it, we can do it. I mean, do you agree with that?
Yes. And I think for many, many years, and I think what you just said is so true today. And that's something that, you know, I'm actually working on that with some advisors that you introduced me to, Lisa. And that is, until a few years ago, the mass, you know, the really gurus, most of them were more experts in their fields, and they didn't concentrate on vulnerability and relatability. And the world today with social media and instant access to information, you know, the successful people today are much more relatable and vulnerable. And I think we were a little bit ahead of the curve on that when we did Rich Dad as well. And I think that might have something to do with our success, because we were touching people in their hearts, not just in their minds. And they were, would see things that they could do for themselves. And it's something that I think all of us, because you want to be smart when you're on camera or on stage, you want to look like you know what you're talking about.
Right.
And yet you need to be real and authentic and show the audience that you've had a few bumps and bruises along the way too.
Well, just listening to both of these stories, like you were absolutely, you have led, I mean, you're not a follower, you have led all of these, you know, initiatives or these businesses. Like you were truly the disruptor, you know, from the talking books to, of course, this financial literacy. So to have two big wins like that in life is unusual. I mean, it's not even unusual. I mean, typically, you know, you'd only have one. But then you had the second one with Rich Dad. So after 10 years, I know you dissolved the partnership, you sold out. And then talk to us about what happened then.
Well, and I think, you know, with Rich Dad, the really disruptive thing that we did, I just want to add to what you just said, and then I'll address this question, is we made it to the number one and made it to the New York Times on our own. And then the big publishers came to look at us. And we, you know, we were getting these traditional publishing contracts. And with my husband Mike's help, we said, no, we want a partnership. And so we actually disrupted the publishing industry by demanding a joint venture within our publication of the Rich Dad series, because we had earned the right. We had established the success. We had gotten the level of sales. We'd sold 1 million books before we went with a major publisher. And so today, many, many well-known authors have joint ventures with publishers. And so we definitely kind of disrupted the publishing industry when we did the Rich Dad deal as well. But to your question, when I made the decision in 2007 to walk away, we were at the height of our success, but it wasn't a good thing for me. And I made that decision because my partner wanted to go into franchising. I didn't agree with the model. It was a great model for us, not for the franchisee. So I made the decision to leave, and not knowing what was going to happen. I thought Rich Dad, Poor Dad, well, the Rich Dad company was going to be my legacy because it was my baby. I'd helped birth it. I gave, you know, all those books, built the company, did all the strategic partnerships, did all the agreements. And it was kind of like walking away from everything you built. So it was like, I didn't know what was going to happen to me. And I wasn't sure what the future held, but I knew that I was making the right decision for my own personal health. And sometimes you have to close one door for other doors of opportunity to open. And a few months later, I got a phone call from the White House asking me to be on the first President's Advisory Council for Financial Literacy. I wouldn't have gotten that call had I still been at Rich Dad.
Wow.
A few months later, I got the phone call from Don Green, Napoleon Hill Foundation, asking me to step into the number one personal development brand in the world, a book, Think and Grow Rich, I read when I was 19. So not only had I built the number one personal finance brand, but now I'm being asked to help reinvigorate the number one personal development brand. I would not have gotten that phone call had I still been at Rich Dad. So everybody watching, I ask you, and I know, Lisa, you and I've had this conversation, and you first time you heard me speak, you heard this. Sometimes you have to close a door for other doors of opportunity to open. So what door do you need to close?
Right. And then I think it's important too that sometimes, and you know, I've talked about this recently, that you don't let that closed door reopen sometimes, because sometimes when you close a door, you know, it's tempting to let it crack or to let it reopen or to go back in time. And I think my best advice, you know, based on what I know and my experiences, and of course, just our conversations are, you know, sometimes it just isn't worth it. You know, once you close that door and you move forward, lock it.
Well, you're the one with the background in automotive, but I do have a little automotive story. I tell entrepreneurs, I said, you know, you are in the driver's seat and you have your foot on the accelerator, and you have this windshield, so you can go in so many different directions. That big idea, what problem are you going to solve? What need are you going to serve? You have the opportunity to go in every direction. Your rearview mirror is very small, and that's because not to let the past pull you back. Just look at it, learn from it, and keep going forward. And it's something that is an analogy I heard many, many years ago, and it's something that I really believe is so true, because for many of us, we tend to make a mistake and we brand ourselves and we carry it around with us forever. And I go, don't let the past pull you back. Focus on the future and put that foot on the accelerator, because the world needs you. The world needs your expertise and what you have to offer. And when you talk about the art of the big sell, you can't focus on the future.
Right.
If part of your focus is on the past.
And isn't that hard? And I think especially for women, you know, is to leave that baggage on the shelf, just to put it on the shelf, be done with it, and to move forward. You know, but what I found is that people with big ideas, you know, they don't have just one big idea. They have a lot of big ideas, and they're very, like you, they're very agile. You know, you're able to say, okay, you know, we had the talking books, it's a success, sold it, done. Now we have the Rich Dad Company. Great, amazing success. Okay, now we're done. Let's go. And you know, that's one thing I really admire about you, is that I don't see you ever look in the rearview mirror. But I would be remiss not to ask you, because you know, and we haven't even finished all of your success story. Will you tell us, you know, during that time, I know that you had some personal things come up, and would you be willing to share that story with us?
Well, absolutely. It's something that until recently, I haven't shared too often on stage or in interviews, because it was a huge personal issue. In December of 2012, my husband and I, we lost our youngest son. And life just stops when something like that happens. Things that used to be important no longer are. Things that I used to lose sleep over, not anymore. Because that redefines everything. And literally, we're talking December of 2012, my life just kind of ended. I continued doing the things I needed to do.
Right.
I was in coast. I was in neutral. I was in autopilot. And I was, of course, I was definitely in mourning. But I lost my hunger, my desire for the big sell, my desire for playing big. And I have played big my entire life. And I literally, in the last 5 years, have I almost lost my yearning for life. And in the last year, I've been thinking, well, maybe I should retire, slow down. And so I started kind of thinking about it, and got a lot of pushback from my friends. And when I talked to somebody that you introduced me to about really turning the juice back up. And I got such a great feedback from the people that I spoke to about it, and most importantly, from my own family.
Right.
And saying, you know, you people still need to hear from you. You still need to, you have more to give, more to offer. And so I'm in a whole redefining mode right now. In 2018, I'm playing big again. Oh. And I'm inviting people to come along with me, because it's not worth it to play small, right?
Right, it's not very satisfying. But you know,
if you're going to do something, do it well and be the best.
Right, but just your the grit that you've got. I mean, you know, like I said, you had two huge, huge successes. Most people don't even get one in a lifetime. And then life comes along, it knocks you down, and you lost your son. And to your point, the majority of the people that I know would probably just go under the covers and go underground. And what I love, Sharon, is that, you know, you went through hell and you maintained, you know, you maintained, but to your point, you weren't out trying to play big. And then there was a moment, and I want you to tell us about that you finally but said to yourself, you know what? I'm bigger than this. I'm better than this. And I'm not ready to retire. What was that moment? What was that catalyst?
Well, I think there were quite a few catalysts in a short amount of time, because it was literally looking at the future, the runway I have left, and saying, is this how I want the rest of my life to be? And it wasn't feeding me, you know, literally, as I said, I've been in neutral. And there were things that basically, when I, obviously I had great success with all of the books that I've done with Think and Grow Rich, Think and Grow Rich for Women. And I literally shared my story for one of the very first times in Austin when we did a Think and Grow Rich for Women event. I had such amazing feedback from women in the audience personally and afterwards about how much that touched their lives. And since then, I've shared it a couple of times with always the same response. And that is that we talk about the relatability. It's for people to understand we all have crises in our lives. We all have things that make us look at what's next. You know, is it what's worth living for, and what do we have to give back? And it was that kind of nurturing that I got from people, and really to see the impact, being open and sharing about my own pain was a positive for other people. Was kind of eye opening for me, and the fact that I'm now working on being more vulnerable. And it's something that, when you were a straight A student and had a dad in the military, vulnerability was not an asset. So now it's really being more honest and more just transparent about the heartache.
I think it's the transparency, because you're the most honest person I know. And I want to tell our listeners, when I first met you, it was January 2 years ago. And we were at an event in San Antonio, and my best friend and co-author of my book was not able to, or our book was not able to attend with me. And she was texting me the entire time, and she said, "You have to meet Sharon Lecter. Lisa, it will change our lives and our book if you could get Sharon Lecter," who of course you were speaking at the event, "to write the foreword to the book." And I will never forget, you walked on stage in black leather pants. And I thought, I love this woman. But I didn't even realize the magnitude of your success, but my co-author did, because she's very heavily involved in the Women's President's Organization, as are you. And I remember speaking to you, and not many people intimidate me, but I was like, oh my gosh, like Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I didn't even know about the talking books at the time, Think and Grow Rich. She sold 30 million books. And then I Googled you. I'm like, you're really a big deal. And you were so nice and so kind, but we had not formed a relationship at that point. And then you graciously, after we sent you the book manuscript, you graciously agreed to write the foreword to the book. So thank you for that. That definitely lended huge credibility, the power of association. But from that, you and I built this amazing friendship. But I just look at, because I know what you're talking about. When I first met you, it was like, wow, I am in the presence of greatness. Like, this woman is, because Renee just kept texting me, she's a really, really, really big deal. Well, Renee's a really big deal, and she's never said that to me about anybody else. And so to know that Sharon Lecter, which of course, again, you were gracious and kind and amazing, but there. And then to know you now as one of my very best friends in the world, and I adore you. The transparency, I know, is hard. I know, especially in the position you're in with all the success that you've had, people are always trying to get to you, right? And that's what I have found over the years. It's like, I'm very suspect when somebody wants to come into my world very quickly, because in my brain, I think, okay, what is it they want? What is it that I can do for them? Because, people typically don't do that. And I know that happens to you tenfold on how it happens to me. So just the fact that you've made the decision to be more transparent and open yourself up to potentially millions of people as you launch these new courses and I think a new book most likely. How does that make you feel right now? Like, do you feel vulnerable? Do you feel energized by it? Do you feel fearful? Where are you at?
Well, one of the things I teach, Lisa, and as part of the Big Sell, as part of Playing Big, is to step outside your own comfort zone. Because if you're not willing to step outside your own comfort zone, you're probably not going to get to that next big platform. And so being a little scared, a little uncomfortable is not always a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. And in fact, I have a picture I often share that from Thailand early last year this time, where I was in a cage with a giant tiger. And I said, you think I was comfortable? No, I was way outside my comfort zone. And so I still try to kick myself to get out of my comfort zone and be that old dog that can learn new tricks. But yeah, I'm very uncomfortable right now with this new initiative of being more vulnerable, because we're going to a place where I still have a lot of pain and a lot of grief. And so to be transparent about it, you're going to see me more choking up and not being able to be the trained speaker when I'm talking about things, where I'm opening the personal pain. And it's something that as long as I know that by sharing that, other people can find help or relatability or a pathway for their own pain, then it's worth doing.
And I'll tell you, I think, and again, not to say that you're not relatable, because me knowing you now, but I just know my experience in meeting you is like, there's a celebrity on the stage. Wow, she's amazing. You know, why would she ever write the foreword to our book? So, you know, the relatability factor is going to be unprecedented for you, because again, you've got millions of fans. I know you do. You cannot write 30 million books and not have 30 million fans because somebody wrote a check to buy those books. But just the fact that you've made this decision, you know, to play big again. I mean, like, again, you've had two huge wins that the average person will never see in a lifetime. And now you're saying, you know what? It's time to do it again. And that message, I believe, for both men and women, when they see what you're developing, the courses and the books, that it's okay, that life can sometimes stop us dead in our tracks. And, you know, so many people that will follow you have not had, to me, the worst life event you can have, and that's losing a child. But the fact that you can take that and 5 years later, use it to help others. And that's what I love about you. You're not doing it for the financial gain. Because I know, and I'm going to say it, but you don't need the money. You've had all the success, but you're doing it for the gain of other people. You know, you're one of the most selfless people that I know. And I believe when you called me and told me about the Play Big Again, I told you, I said, Sharon, I've got chills through my entire body, because life stops people in their tracks at 20, 30, 40, and 50. And they have got to be given a roadmap and sometimes permission. And from a relatable role model, somebody who has been through it, that, hey, you know what? It might have slowed you down, but it's time to play big again. Mm-hmm. So I cannot, I know to my very soul, and I believe, and I told you that, I think your platform will be bigger now than it ever was with Talking Books or Rich Dad, because I don't know a human being that hasn't been knocked down in life. And most of them do not get back up. And I've always believed that you have one time around this earth, one time around the sun, to build your legacy, to build your life. And you're going to show people how to do that again. In fact, I don't know of any author really that has not only written a book, but created the course on how to do that. So what kind of responsibility do you feel to your followers? Like, what is it that Play Big is going to do? Play Big Again. What do you see the big idea or the takeaway from that?
Well, so many times people lack self-confidence, and that's why they don't play big. They play small. They stay in their comfort zone. And so I want to share things that we've done that anyone can do. I mean, everything I've done in my career, someone else could do as well. If the issue is taking that risk and looking and saying, how can I get to a bigger platform? What association can take me to where I need to go? My message, every one of you has a message. You are all experts. And what I want to do is help train you on becoming the authority. And getting you from expert to authority is when people start calling you and want you to be part of theirs, part of their organization, or they want to learn from you. And so once you're the authority, you have the opportunity to improve the lives of millions of people. And that's really, at the end of the day, I tell the story, Lisa, when I was a little kid, my dad would ask me every night, have you added value to someone's life today? Mm. And that reminder just a few months ago was really one of the things that kicked me into going back into the game, was the fact that I was feeling like I wasn't feeling energized anymore. And I said, for me to feel energized, I have to go back to say, yes, I'm out there and I'm doing everything in my power to add value to other people's lives. And that is by realizing, not allowing that lack of self-confidence to hold you back, but energize that sense of purpose to know that you have a message to share and there are people who need to hear from you. And so I see the art of the big sell as how you can take that lack of self-confidence and move it aside and tie into that ability to change people's lives in a much bigger way.
So what do you see 100 years from now that the legacy of Sharon Lecter will be?
Well, I've been asked that question several times. The one time that was most burned in my brain is in China. And I was speaking in Shanghai, and there was a room full of people. Nobody spoke English. Very few people spoke English. So I had a translator. And so during the Q&A, a young man stood up and asked a question to me. And of course, he asked it in Chinese, and the whole room started booing him. And I'm going, uh-oh, I wonder what this is. So my translator, who happened to also be a dear friend, said, Sharon, you don't need to answer this question. And people are mad at him because they think that it's a rude question. And I said, well, what is the question? And he said, he's asking you, what do you think the meaning of life is? And I guess the room felt that that was, you know, and I thought for just a few seconds, and I said, no, I'll answer it. And it was, you know, what is the meaning of life? And when you say, what is the legacy? It goes back to my dad's comment every night. You know, I want people when I'm gone to feel that having known me added value to their lives.
Well, I can tell you, as somebody who knows you very well, you add an incredible amount of value to my life and to the lives of your friends and your staff. And you are so beloved. And, you know, as we're winding down the show and as we're coming to a close, one thing I did not hit on, but I want you to tell a little bit about, is your book, Think and Grow Rich for Women. Because I've been involved with putting on events with you with it. But that book, I want you to tell our audience a little bit about Think and Grow Rich for Women and what was behind that.
Well, when I had that call from the Napoleon Hill Foundation, I was asked to help reinvigorate. So the first book I did was 3 Feet from Gold. And then the month we were releasing that was when they called me with this hidden manuscript called Outwitting the Devil, which is
best
an incredible
book ever, everybody. Best book ever. It's a must read.
It's a great, great book written by Napoleon Hill, and it was hidden away for 75 years because his wife was afraid of the title. But then as we were releasing that, a lot of things were happening in the world that were frustrating me as it related to women. And I had always kind of resisted doing a book specifically for women, even though, you know, I helped write Rich Woman. But it's something that I felt at the time needed to be done. Think and Grow Rich was written, and he worked on it for 25 years. It was released in 1937. There were no women in business. So I thought, let's honor the original Think and Grow Rich by sharing his topics, following the same chapter outline, but looking at those steps to success through the eyes of successful women. I interviewed and researched women of history. Over 300 women are highlighted in the book. And it was to bring to those people reading the book, again, relatable. You might not relate to this story, but you relate to this story. The fact that those steps to success are the same for men and women, but we tend to approach them differently. And so give you the opportunity to find nuggets of information that can help you in your journey, help you really achieve the success that you deserve. But there were two things that were really driving me. Was I was unhappy with the dialogue. So many women were out there complaining and criticizing and, you know, talking about the men who stand in their way. And all of that may be true. But if you understand the law of attraction, when you spew negativity, what do you get back? Negativity. So I said, let's change the dialogue. Let's highlight the successes women have had. Let's highlight and acknowledge and celebrate the men who are supportive of women. And if we start concentrating on celebration of women and the men that support us, we will get more success as opposed to focusing on the criticizing. And then the second thing that really was my driving force was this concept of women constantly thinking about work-life balance. And I don't believe there is balance. We all have one big life, and our life includes our business, our family, our spiritual life, our physical life, our financial life. All of those things come together to create one big life. And if you're not happy with the time you spent with your kids yesterday, just make different choices today. Don't spend precious time today worrying and fretting over the past. That rearview mirror, just learn from it and make different choices going forward. So those were really the two driving forces internally for me to write Think and Grow Rich for Women. And I've just been so thrilled with the response. It's been fantastic.
Oh, and the book, and like you said, I mean, there's people, everyday people, women in the book, and then, you know, people like Sheryl Sandberg and Mary Barra. So it's unbelievable. It's a great read. I want to absolutely recommend Outwitting the Devil. You know, really how to put fear in its place. I think it's the best book I've ever read in my life. Sharon knows that. I said at some point I need to get royalties on this book because all the time I am recommending it and people are posting, Lisa, you're right. Outwitting the Devil is the best book ever. Well, Sharon, as we draw to a close, thank you so very much. And what a treasure you are. And, you know, I can't even imagine 100 years from now when you and I are in heaven up there on that cloud, you know, reading our legacies, because I think that, you know, you and I both fundamentally believe that your legacy is not your end of life story, but it's your everyday story. And you mm-hmm. have the ability to change it, correct it, and write a new one by the choices that you make. And that you and I both believe that we don't, you know, that fear should not stop you from success. And fear, I mean, look what you're doing. You are writing this new chapter in your life. You know, you've made this decision after just a monstrous amount of success. And you had mentioned earlier that you thought you should retire. And I know you said that to me one time and I was like, no, you cannot retire. And you know what? There's no way you would. I think that you're going to be 110 years old and still preaching from the mountaintops and people are still going to listen because what you have to say is life changing. Will you let everyone know how they can get a hold of you and how they can follow you?
Well, absolutely. Thank you. SharonLechter.com, and that's SharonLechter.com. I have my own podcast that you can find on my website as well. I have lots of weekly blogs coming out. So lots of my books are all listed there. So please visit me for information. If you want a specific question, write to me at info@SharonLechter. And of course, I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, all of it under Sharon Lechter. So please, I would love to hear from each of you.
And you're a lot more on Facebook nowadays with that beautiful granddaughter of yours, Annalise. So, you know, just saying. Anyways, Sharon, thank you again. This has been a great time and just great information and so valuable. And I guess my closing thoughts are the big idea is that you're never done until you're done. And you can make a choice at any point in time to start over and to commit to play big again. So thank you, Sharon.
Thank you, Lisa.